Hello everyone, welcome to another video from Fantasy Football Scout. It's that time of the week where we look at Janny's team selection. The good news is I've overtaken Janny in the rankings once again. And here we are. How's it going, Janny?
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm gutted by that, although I'm not surprised. You were on a wild card, so I expected you to have a little boost. But yeah, damn. Is it really close?
It's ridiculously close, yeah. I think there's like 2 points in it or maybe less. I'm 175. Okay, you're 186. So there
I bet that's a point.
It's like a point or 2 points. There's literally nothing in it. But yeah, it's pretty yo-yo. Each week we come on here and one of us is overtaking the other. So I'm guessing next week you'll be back ahead of me, unless I can keep it going. So how's your week been? Good to have the football back, right?
Yeah, lovely to have the Premier League back. I've missed it. And do you know what? I love it when you get Premier League back after a break and then you're straight into midweek Champions League as well. So like, it's just a bit of a, you know, we had a Monday night football, which I watched because of FPA. I watched on mute. It was one of the sort of games you watch on mute whilst you're watching an ITV drama with your wife. And you're like keeping your eye on it just because you've got a couple of players, but you don't actually care about Palace Arsenal. But then you've got Champions League. Then you're Thursday's usually my night off because unless Chelsea are in the Europa League. And then Friday, we've got a game as well. So it's a proper full week of football.
Yeah, yeah. I was at the Emirates on Monday. It was...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was good. It's first like live football I've seen in a long time. Yeah. It was an interesting Arsenal performance. Saka was the best player on the pitch in your team. We're going to talk about him in a bit. Until he obviously got subbed at half-time. And then Arsenal went to complete pot. So, yeah Arsenal were... I think that is going to be the story of Arsenal. I think we're going to see some really good games for them, some good halves. And then we're going to see them... not so good as well. So not so good for me having two Arsenal players on my wildcard team. But let's take a look at your week. So you got 52 points. Yeah, you had Ramsdale in goal with two. Interesting defence. Cancelo with six. James, you bought in for Rudiger with one. Diaz with one. Christensen with six. So Diaz coming on blocked. Obviously, Livramento, who was first on your bench.
And
six.
James.
Yeah.
And Jimenez.
And Salah, 26, just like the rest of us. Foden ticking on nicely with six. Saka with zero. Yeah, we'll talk about him in a sec. Antonio, one. Lukaku, two. Jimenez, one. Bit of a meh game week, wasn't it? I think it was a bit of a meh game week for a lot of people.
It was. And do you know what? Like 6 points on the bench is perfectly normal. And we don't moan about that as FPL managers. But I'm going to moan about it this week. Why? Well, how... I 6 points bench is fine. Livramento, you're my budget enabler defender. You'll probably be first sub for a while. Like, that's cool. If you get points, it's win-win. It's not win-win when you have three players come off the bench late in games. So Diaz got like 20 minutes. Reece James and Jimenez got like 4 or 5 minutes. And then Saka obviously went off and got injured, got 45 and started. But to have three players who are all like very likely to start, like in all the predicted 11s, from all the journos, Reece James and Diaz were starting. Yeah. No one saw those two things coming. Jimenez was always a little bit, So it's just annoying because I swear the whole of FPL Twitter had Livramento come off their bench as second or third sub. I have him first sub and he doesn't come off mine. So I was absolutely... And then obviously, like, when Man City and Chelsea get clean sheets, you're like, oh, if Reece James and Diaz had played, that's 6 points. So it was just a frustrating week for things like that, because at the moment, 5 points that I'd be up on Livramento or Diaz or James getting a cleano, those 5 points are like 80K in rank. Like, yeah, that's big.
I think Diaz is the really frustrating one, because, I mean, how often does Pep sub on a centre-back like
Laporte
that?
Laporte was booked.
Yeah.
When Laporte got booked in the first half, I'm thinking, oh God, does this mean if he starts playing on the edge, he'll hook him?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the people. So Livramento, let's talk about him first, because obviously he was benched by pretty much everyone. He had a good fixture against Leeds. He's got a good run of fixtures coming up. Burnley at home next. What do you make of him? I mean, he's doing what, like you say, he's doing kind of what we want. He's getting points, but obviously he needs to be coming off your bench. He's coming off the bench for a lot of people. Is it time to think about playing him?
I think it might be. Yeah, the fixtures are really good.
Well, don't sit on the fence, Johnny. It's a really strong opinion there. It's great.
I mean, I love him as first sub. I actually think with Livramento on your bench as first sub, if I was wildcarding now, I'd probably look at two really cheap players, two Brownhill types and a Livramento. I'd go really thin, because Livramento is a brilliant sub to have. And at the moment, he's popping up a lot as second sub or third sub. Well, with the run of fixtures, Southampton have got, there's no reason why he shouldn't be first sub. So I'd promote him a little bit. I don't know if I'd necessarily say he's now for the starting 11, although many of us have picked teams where we've got rotation risks now. We've got Chelsea defenders. We've got Phil Foden. Even some of us have got the likes of Laporte or John Stones. So these guys, because they're rotation risks, you've just got to hope they don't get 5 minutes and 1 point, as all my players did at the weekend. And then you get Livramento on anyway. So it's nice having that backup plan. I mean, Southampton are a team where I look at and go, he's definitely the defender of choice to have. You don't look at their midfield. You actually think Livramento is as likely to get an assist as any of their midfielders, maybe other than Ward-Prowse for his set pieces. So there's attacking threat there as well. And when Huijsen-Huntelaar goes on good runs, his team can keep clean sheet after clean sheet. They can also, on their day, just go like absolutely collapse and concede six or seven. But we haven't seen that much. I think we've seen that early in the season, a few sort of goals conceded in one game. But yeah, I like Huijsen-Huntelaar and I like Livramento a lot.
It's interesting because a lot of people have gone premium at the back, myself included. You jumped on it early on. Chelsea and City, lots of players going for those players. There's people still with Shaw. There's people still with 5.5 million defenders. And then you look at kind of like the 5 million and the 4.5s, and none of them really do it for me, except for Livramento and probably Duffy. I mean, those two are just the standouts, aren't they, under 5 million?
Yeah, they are. Like I can see no reason why you wouldn't go three premiums and then you go Livramento, Duffy, and then you have two enablers in and one attack or two midfielders of sort of 4.5s. If I was wildcarding at the moment, I genuinely think I'd be looking at that.
Yeah, that's what I did. I mean, they're a gift. I mean, I think we both bought in Reece James, both got minutes off the bench for him. We both blocked Livramento for both of us, which is very frustrating. But I mean, if you had Alonso, for example, he's perfect, because I think there's probably going to be as much rotation between Alonso and Chilwell, but I just can't see that sub being made too often, like Alonso coming off and Chilwell coming on. Like Reece James does bring something different to that side on the right if they're playing Azpilicueta there or something like that. Whereas Alonso and Chilwell are quite similar, aren't they, really? So that is the bonus of going for one of Alonso and Chilwell. And I'm seeing more and more people buying Chilwell. What's your stance on all this like wing back rotation? I mean, Reece James, couldn't believe he didn't start it. He surely starts tonight. Are you confident of a start against Norwich?
No, I don't think so.
I didn't want to hear that. Oh no.
Yeah, I'm confident he starts tonight, but then against Norwich, who knows? Yeah, in theory he should. Like I'd have him at sort of 80% likely, but Tuchel and fullbacks is so hard to predict. We all know there's going to be rotation with Alonso and Chilwell, but we all thought Alonso, for his height, will be in against Brentford. And he played Chilwell against Brentford.
And he scored.
And Chilwell scored. So, like, there's definitely going to be... I can see Alonso and Chilwell literally sharing minutes. I think both will start three games out of six in the Premier League, right? You look at Reece James and you take six games and you think he's going to start four or five of them. The fear with Reece James is he does tend to come off the bench quite a bit. Alonso and Chilwell never come off the bench.
No, exactly.
So there is that fear of the one-pointers. But with all that said, knowing you get more starts out of James, I still think he's the best option.
Do you? So are you, bearing in mind Rudiger didn't play and James got 1 point, if you could make that switch back now to Rudiger for free, would you do it?
Not a chance.
You'd stick with James?
No. Yeah, I made that change last week. I had a free transfer. It was Saturday morning. I was actually WhatsApping Late Riser and I was like, he was speaking about his wild card and I showed him my team and he was like, Rudiger to James is such an obvious move. I was like, yeah, I've slept on that and been genuinely thinking about it. But for this week, it doesn't really matter because I've had a really good squad anyway. He was like, yeah, but moving forward, given the choice, who would you prefer? And I was like, massively Reece James. The only reason I didn't have him was because when I wildcarded, we didn't know how long Reece James was out for. But for the upside, Reece James all day long, because yeah, Rudiger will play 90 more often than not, but his ceiling, I know he can score goals and can get bonus, but you think his ceiling, a standard week, is 6 points. Well, Reece James' ceiling on a standard week is more than that.
Yeah. If Reece James was nailed on for 90 or zero, I would be a lot more confident. It's the fact that he did come on that worries me a bit about him, because if he's getting zero and I've got Livramento coming on, I'm happy with that. If he's getting 90, I'm pretty sure he's going to get something, because he's so attacking and so good at crossing when he does come on. And I think Lukaku's missing him. I mean, Lukaku hasn't scored now in six games, and I think part of that is because Reece James has been out. He's such an outlet for him, isn't he? Because he can just get that ball into the box, and that's where Lukaku likes it.
Yeah, really annoying when Aspie has come in at right wing back, he's actually done really well. And I'm like, which you expect from Azpilicueta every single time he plays, you will always get a 7 or an 8 out of 10. Saying that, Reece James crossing is better than Azpilicueta's. As good as Aspie has been, Reece James adds that little bit of X factor. And we saw it early in the season. He scored a goal, was it in game week 2 or game week 3? He can get forward and he's so dangerous. So I think you're right. Lukaku's massively missed that. And surely now he gets a run of games. I want to see him play tonight. And then I want to see him hopefully being given the nod against Norwich. He should be able to play 2 games in 4 days. That shouldn't be a big issue for him, knowing he's been out injured. But when you're out injured, you're also getting a rest, which is quite nice.
Yeah,
he should be fresh.
If he doesn't play against Norwich, I'm getting rid.
Because if he doesn't play against Norwich, that's a sign we know there's no trust there.
It's one of those ones where the fixtures are so good that every week you can think, oh, he hasn't played this week, so I think he's going to play next week. I've had it with Mahrez before, we have it with Pep's players. But yeah, if he's not starting games against Norwich, I mean, why on earth they wouldn't start him and play one of the more kind of maybe defensive oriented wing backs? Just play Reece James, let him kick on and score. I'm happy holding him, but yeah, we need to see some starts from him. All right, let's talk about Saka. I mean, Saka was so good for you a few weeks ago. He was, I can comfortably say he was fantastic at the Emirates in the first half. He was all over the pitch. He was the fact that he was the best player on the pitch at the age he is, and demonstrating the qualities that he did is a real testament to him. I think he's an absolutely phenomenal player. Arsenal have got a hell of a talent there, but he does drop deep. He is dropping deep. He is covering players when they put an attacking lineup up, and when they're pushing on, it's Saka that was dropping back into kind of almost a left back role. No points, got booked, and then I mean taken out completely. I don't know. Probably should have been a red card, really. It was a bit dodgy. But what's your feeling on him? Are you happy to stick with him, or are you a bit kind of, because you've got two Arsenal like me, right?
Do you know what? I always look first and foremost, and I don't know if this is the right thing to do as an FPL manager, but I've always done it and I can't see myself changing. I always look at the team first before the individual. So for example, the reason I've not bought Callum Wilson much over the years is because I've gone, I don't fancy Bournemouth or I don't fancy Newcastle. And actually I've been stung by that, because it doesn't matter if Newcastle are rubbish, Callum Wilson still gets points. But I go, I don't want Newcastle attack, therefore I don't consider Callum Wilson. And if we take this sort of scenario with Arsenal, at the moment, I'm not fancying the Arsenal team, so I don't want an Arsenal attacking player. When I bought Saka on wildcard, I did it because I saw Arsenal against Spurs. They absolutely blew them away and smashed them. And I think I was sold off that one game, and I knee-jerked him in off the back of it. And I probably didn't calculate perhaps all the other Arsenal games where they've been really average. And watching the game against Palace the other night, I am still slightly concerned that there's not really an identity there. Look at Patrick Vieira. Look what he's done at Crystal Palace within a couple of months. There is a clear identity with the high press, the fast pace, how they want to play. I look at Arsenal and look at Arteta, and I still couldn't tell you what their game plan is. Like, they're a little bit of an underwhelming, boring side that never look like they're going to go and score 2, 3, 4 goals in the game. And when I'm covering an Arsenal attacker, I need to see goals, and I can't necessarily see them. And I know they came on, and Lacazette looked really good when he came on and got the goal, and Aubameyang will always score you some, but Saka isn't the talisman in that team, not in terms of goals and assists, as good as he is, and he does carry them. But I wonder if he's dropping deep as because he is getting frustrated. He wants to be on the ball when he knows how good he is. We also know his breakthrough season at Arsenal 3 years ago was as a left back, and he was getting assists for fun at left back, but he naturally can perform well in those deeper areas where he's got a lot of the game in front of him. So I think from my 11, as we look at it, the one player I'm looking to sell is Saka. And I do think that's an easy transfer out. Whether I do it this week or not, I'm not sure, because at the moment I've got a benching headache anyway. He can happily sit on my bench. And if he's fit for Villa, then it's not the worst game to play him in, because Villa's defence has been equally poor. But I'm looking at targeting Brentford attack. And again, it's teams. It's always teams. I'm not looking at bringing in Tony. I'm looking at targeting Brentford attack. So who is that? Well, yeah, it might be Tony, but it's Mbeumo. And I'm looking at selling Arsenal attack, and that is Saka.
Yeah, it's a shame with Saka because I could sing his praise all day. I think the one thing he brings to the team that I saw a real lack of was just composure. Like the amount of times Arsenal would get the ball and it could just do an easy pass and they just hoof it down the pitch or kick it out for a throw-in and stuff. They constantly look under pressure even when they're not under pressure, and I can't really understand where the calmness is, like this, or where it's gone, you know, because they've had some good results. They Palace in the first half particularly didn't really threaten them too much, but the second half started and they just completely lost their grip on the game, kicking balls left, right and centre. So I think that is a large part down to Saka's absence, and yeah, hopefully he's back for the next game because like I really think they need him. Right, let's have a look at your team for next week then. So you've got Ramsdale in goal, Cancelo, James, Diaz and Christensen. So you're a double up on Chelsea and City. Salah, Foden, Rafinha in midfield, and Antonio, Lukaku captain, and Jimenez. And you've got Livermore on the bench, Saka and Brownhill. So you mentioned selling Saka for Mbeumo. My question to you when you sent me this team is, well, who would you bench if you brought him in?
Such a headache this week. Mm. And I knew when I was wildcarding, I was setting myself, like when you wildcard, you see what your team's going to look like in 3 and 4 and 5 weeks time. And I knew that this week and next, for a few weeks, I'm going to have a few headaches, mainly because Livramento's fixtures are so good. But yeah, who do I bench? I mean, one thing I would say is I've gone with a starting 11 there that I think I'll probably run with, but do I expect them all to start? I think Cancelo could be up for a rest.
I'm worried about
him. I think
as well.
Christensen could miss out quite comfortably. I think Foden could miss out quite comfortably. Like there are players there that are rotation risks.
Some rumours that Rafinha's isolating as well. You see that?
Say again?
Some rumours that Rafinha is isolating.
Yeah, I saw that Instagram post.
Not sure on the, you know, on the authenticity of that, but I read that somewhere.
So
even Lukaku, right? With Tuchel saying that he's tired and, you know, needs a bit of a break. If he starts tonight in the Champions League, I mean, it's unthinkable, isn't it? But could he miss out against Norwich?
I don't think so. I know there's been so many retweets of that one comment from Tuchel, and I completely get it. Like what he said should raise alarm bells, but I still take that with a pinch of salt. For me, he's reacting to what he did in the weekend. And that was, he subbed Lukaku at like 65, 70 minutes against Brentford. He kept Werner on the pitch. He subbed Lukaku because Lukaku was tired. I think that's his rest, his 20 minutes against Brentford, which, by the way, he knew Brentford were going to throw the kitchen sink at Chelsea. He knew he needed tall players that could clear headers. And in that game, Lukaku was a real, real asset to Chelsea clearing their lines at the back. So to bring him off was really telling. Saying that, I feel like that's his mini rest. And I do think he starts tonight. And again, if Chelsea score a couple against Malmo early, don't surprise to see Lukaku off at 60-70 if the game is won. Surely he starts against Norwich. I can't see him not starting against Norwich. I really can't. And I know people will see him start tonight against Malmo and maybe even play 90 and if he doesn't score and go, oh, maybe we don't give him the armband. But for me, he still starts against Norwich. I'm not that concerned about that. The benching headache is real this week. At the moment, it's Livermento. I'd expect him to come on for one of those guys I've mentioned.
You hope.
But who knows? And again, is there much point in making the transfer of Saka to Mbeumo when he's only going to be my second sub? I mean, if I bought Mbeumo in, he probably gets promoted to first sub, but he's still on my bench. So actually, yes, he's going to go up in value before the game week deadline of Friday night, but I think I'm just going to perhaps roll, keep the two transfers and bring him in the week after with another one. It gives you a little bit more flexibility should you get any big injuries. I then got two frees and I want to target Trent. So maybe having the two transfers is more useful than going in 1 week early.
Yeah.
And saving point one.
A few people in the chat saying Rafinha has been training and is okay to play. So that's good news. That's one less one less headache. You seen Mbeumo's stats on hitting the post?
Is it six times?
Six times. Twice against Chelsea. Six times total. The next most is two for another player. So he's hit the post four times more than any other player in the league. Surely a goal's coming for him soon. But is the worry that he's a bit cursed? We see players with good stats, out of position, he's got all the markings of a great fantasy asset, but you know, maybe some witch or warlock has cursed him and he's never going to score.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly not a very good finisher. Like, you can say someone hits the woodwork and call them unlucky, but at some point, Yeah. You've just got to look at it and go, Timo Werner hit the woodwork a silly amount of times last season. Traore hits the woodwork a lot. Tammy Abraham has also hit the woodwork six times this season. All these guys are poor finishers. They're not good enough in front of goal. Like, but they are getting the chances and they are cheap FPL assets. So if they're getting the chances, they're still going to score some of
that's
these.
That's the difference,
these,
isn't
these
it?
Shots.
It's a 5.5 million mid and not a 9 million striker taking up a striker spot or anything like that. I honestly do think Mbeumo is the play.
This, and he's on set pieces.
Yeah, I know. He's got everything. He's got everything you want. I'm just looking at your team and thinking, I don't think you can. I mean, maybe you'd bench Diaz, but
or would
it
you
seems
bench
like
Antonio?
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't.
Not in. I mean, West Ham normally do quite well against Spurs, and Spurs haven't been great. I think the only player in your team that I'd consider benching would be Diaz. Because he's you talk about ceilings, right? He's capped at six, I'd imagine, against Brighton, whereas Mbeumo, in theory, has got more potential. But do you need to do it? I don't think so.
Yeah, and I look at Leicester and think, now they've beaten United, will the wind be in their sails? Could they actually perform well against Brentford? And could it be a really tight game? But one thing you do see with Brentford every time they play is you do see there's potential goal threat there. And I looked at it and was like, who in that 11 would I bench for Mbeumo? And you're right, Diaz is probably the best shout. And I actually, for a second, did look at Antonio because his numbers have been poor in the last few games. But the ceiling for Antonio in any given week is like 12, 15 points, right? And he's going to be up against Dyer, who was absolutely dire against Newcastle. Like, Callum Wilson scored in the first 2 minutes of that football match. It looked like a really smart run. Ball comes in from Kieran Clarke, near post run, what you expect from Wilson. Header from 7 yards out. But Dyer's so easily beaten. And how many times have we seen in an England shirt and in a Spurs shirt, Dyer out of position? And yes, there's the own goal, but these mistakes can happen with own goals. And he completely fluffed it and that happens. And he's got that nightmare in him. But for me, the first goal is even worse because you just go, as a centre-back, I want you to be more alert and have better positioning. Mm. And I say the same about Harry Maguire and I say the same about Wan-Bissaka. These guys, whilst they are dubbed very good, excellent league best defenders, positionally they need coaching and time on the training ground. Give them to Conte for 2 years and they'll look like a worldie, but they're just out of position all the time. So I think Antonio could run rings around Dyer, to be fair.
Yeah, I know. I definitely wouldn't even be considering benching him. I mean, we've seen people, you know, top managers in the community, late rise example, sold Antonio, told him for Werner, which I mean definitely raised some eyebrows from me. I really wouldn't want to be going to this game without Antonio. I think this could be, I know he's been a little bit off the ball, hasn't got, you know, hasn't hit the heights that he was hitting earlier in the season, but a double digit haul wouldn't surprise me going to this game. I think he's a great pick.
Yeah. So I think I'll probably roll, and if I get itchy and I get an injury, then maybe I go Saka out to Mbeumo a week early.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
But I still
yeah.
think he'll be on my bench. I still think I'd go Diaz. I don't know.
Yeah. It's that's a tricky decision, that is. Because, yes, I mean, someone pointed out, you know, you talk about ceilings and floors and all that. I mean, I think Diaz gets six.
Like, yeah,
There's no question about that. The City defensive numbers are so outrageous. And Brighton have been, yeah, we're regressing now back to where we were last season. You know, couldn't score against Norwich. And I do think we'll probably struggle to score against City, which probably isn't the most insightful bit of punditry ever, but I can't see us getting too much out of that game. Let's talk about Salah for a second. I mean, you know, Lukaku is overwhelming favourite. I think 4 or 5 weeks ago, it was, you know, you'd have about 95% of people going Lukaku. I think we're seeing a little bit of reluctance, given that he hasn't scored in six games, given Salah's form, given that United are posting some of the worst defensive numbers in the league. Is there any part of you that, I mean, you're a bit biased as a Chelsea fan, but is there any part of you that is thinking maybe Salah is a better captaincy bit this week?
It's the ultimate form versus fixture. If ever there was an example, it's this week. Chelsea would have to play terribly tonight for me to consider captains Salah. Like, if Chelsea lose to Malmo and Lukaku blanks, I probably do captain Salah, but they would have to lose to Malmo or play really poorly. Like, if they beat Malmo 1-0 and played really poorly and Lukaku blanked, maybe I'd still consider Salah, but it's all on tonight for me. I would have to see some really horrible things for me to take the armband off Lukaku.
I've seen some things tonight. Yeah, I mean, United don't have a very good record against top six sides. I mean, last year they were embarrassing, frankly. They barely scored, but they barely concede as well. They do eke out a lot of nil nils. They do maybe lose 1-0 or something like that. Solskjaer kind of sets them up not to lose in these games, and then they tend to do okay in it. Yeah. Can I see a big Liverpool win against United? I'm not sure I can, even with the problems United have got. I think if Liverpool get two goals, win that 2-0, I think that's probably about as much as I'd expect. I don't think they're going to score three, four goals. I think a lot of people are predicting. I think they're going to. I'm going for a 2-0 in my prediction on Black Box tonight. Chelsea, though, realistically, it could and should be any score. And you'd think Lukaku would be the one at the epicentre of all.
Has to be. Like, at some point, Lukaku's going to score a hat-trick, right? Like, we know he's had modest returns to date, but if ever there was a fixture where he can bully a defence and a back line, it's Norwich, who are all over the place. Norwich were really unlucky not to score, and they do offer some attacking threat against Brighton. But at the same time, they were really lucky not to concede a goal against Brighton. And rather than facing Morpie, they're going to be facing Lukaku. So it's a much scarier challenge. I think it's the home advantage as well. Like, Norwich travelling to Stamford Bridge. I just think this could be a rout. And we don't think Liverpool United will be. I'm with you. Like, Liverpool will win. I could see him scoring a couple, but 4-5-0 is just surely not going to happen. But, you know, Chelsea, you could comfortably see 4-5 goals. You've got to back him, I think. If you don't captain Lukaku versus Norwich at home, when will you give him the armband?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess the thing with Lukaku is, and what I want to see more of is him actually looking like he wants to score and not just getting the ball, chesting it down to other players. And because we knew he'd bring other players into the game. I mean, he's kind of like the complete centre forward in that regard, right? But that's not good for us as FPL picks. And I still don't fancy any of the other Chelsea options around him as sensible players. I really do hope Reece James comes in, because I think that really does change things up for me.
You have Reece James and Alonso feeding Lukaku. That's almost your front three. I'm personally not a fan of Werner and Lukaku up front together. I don't like it. They both want to make very similar runs. Like, as good as Lukaku is, and he's massively improved his hold-up game, he still doesn't want to come short. Naturally, his game is explosive and he still wants to run behind. He wants to play on the shoulder, and Werner wants to do that exact same thing. So when you've got two forwards both wanting to do the same job, you run into each other's spaces. And I think that's why we've not seen good productivity from Werner and Lukaku in the two games they've played together. What Lukaku needs is people feeding him, Mason Mount feeding him, James, Alonso, maybe even Havertz in there too, but not Werner, who wants to make the same runs.
Yep, very good. Right, let's talk fixtures then. Going forward, so the Friday night game is Arsenal Villa, which I believe you're doing a watch along for.
Yeah, just waiting to confirm a guest, but I plan to do the Friday. I'm out of action Saturday, so it's either Friday or I do the big Sunday game at 4:30. But I like doing the start of the game week, because we can talk then about the game week ahead.
I like a Friday night watch along. You will be going into that likely with one Arsenal player then, in just Ramsdale. I'll have one as well. I'm probably going to bench Smith Rowe for Livramento, which is a bit of a nothing. It's one of those transfers which you can think about all week, and then they both get 2 points and it hasn't made any blind bit of difference. So then we've got Chelsea v Norwich at 12:30. You've already said we're both expecting hopefully a big win for Chelsea in that. And then it's Palace Newcastle. So Steve Bruce sacked today. Don't think anyone's too surprised to see that happening. Palace looking good under the new manager, lots of identity. What's your feeling on Newcastle in this one?
Yeah, I think this is a home win. Palace were unlucky against Arsenal. Like, that second half was really strong. They might have the likes of Zaha back, although even without him, every time you watch Palace without Zaha over the last however many years, you go, they look rubbish without Zaha. He carries them. That's the first time I've seen Palace without Zaha, and they absolutely smashed it. They have got a squad now. They've got attacking threat all over. Benteke looked great. Edouard looked good coming up sort of from a wide position, cutting inside. So, yeah, I think Newcastle, will have unlikely appointed a manager. I know Fonseca's highly rumoured to get the gig, but even if he does, he won't be picking the team. He's going to need time. Palace home win for me.
Yeah, I'm a bit tempted by Edouard, you know, because I've got Neil Mopay in my team. Don't really want him long term, so I'm looking at ways of people to move out for. I think we've got quite a few options now. We've got Tony, obviously, a lot of people getting. You've got Hwang, 5-5, yeah. Started again for Wolves. You've got Edouard.
Roger as well at Southampton.
Yeah, yeah. You've been talking him up, haven't you? You like him.
I love that. I love it when a prediction comes off. when I saw the team news on Scoutcast Match Day, I was like, oh, no Adam Armstrong, Brodger's starting, get in. He's a Chelsea loanee. We were happy to sell Livramento. I say happy. We didn't want to sell Livramento, and we've got a massive buyback clause of like 40 million on him. Mm. But one guy we wouldn't sell was Brodger, Albanian number 9. He's brilliant. He's a unit. He looks like Graziano Pelle, who we remember as a great FPL asset at Southampton. And he plays similar. He's quite explosive. He's a big target man, but can run as well. Hits the ball so clean. And I said at 5 million, I think he could become a really good value asset in FPL. Now he's got his start. He got his first start. And I said he's going to score today. And he put one away against, was it Leeds they're playing? Yep. And I think he'll get a run of games now.
You think he keeps his really well got, obviously top got Che Adams.
Alongside Redmond.
Yeah,
so Armstrong's got a little bit of work to do, I'd say.
Yeah, Armstrong's to come in, Che Adams, Roger. I mean, they've got some attacking options now when they kind of written them off. I mean, a few people have gone for Adam Armstrong. Andy was on Black Box last week talking of Adam Armstrong, didn't play, his replacement scores. But yeah, I mean, for 5 million or whatever he is he 5 million?
5.0.
Yeah, 5.0. I mean, he's in that kind of bracket, isn't he, where the 4.5 forwards are dead in the water. So he's paying a little bit extra and getting one that might actually get some minutes does seem a good strategy. Yeah, nice. See, Gianni, not just a pretty face, also an insightful bastion of Southampton striker knowledge for some reason.
Yeah, or just Chelsea loanees.
Yeah, quite niche.
I remember saying at the start of the season, as I tweeted that this is the four. You know, everyone was looking for the new sort of Lundstrom or whatever. And when we get a 4.0 defender pre-season, the community goes wild for it. I tweeted, we've got the 4.0 defender we need, and a screen grab of Livramento. It just the day he signed for Southampton, I got so much stick, including Southampton fans being like, this FPL guy knows nothing about our club. He's not going to start calling the 4.0 asset we all need. Oh, well, by game week 3, you mug, you've bought him. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't give me stick and then go and buy him. And like, I said he was good. Just trust me on it. He's good. He's an absolute baller. There's a reason why he's got like a 40 million release clause. So I couldn't wait to go back through all the comments. By game week 2, I think he had started, or game week 3. And I went to town on him. I was like, no, do you know what? Usually I'd ignore it. And I know it's petty and I don't care. I got so much stick for suggesting he was a good the 4.0 defender we all want. And now everyone's got him in their bloody teams. Don't deserve him.
And you're very, very humble about it as well, Jenny. That's what I always liked about you. I know the feeling though is, I mean, you know, we all get lots of stick for. It's always that one, isn't it? I've always said you get stick if you sit on the fence because people want you to have opinions. But then as soon as you have a strong opinion about something, you get slated. I gave that opinion on Leeds a few weeks ago, saying I thought they could be in a relegation battle this year, and I'm not entirely convinced they won't be. Outrun for the first time against Southampton in 44 games. Injuries to key players in their sort of most sort of well, their best run of the season. Not they need to start picking up some points.
I like Wolves that shout, Az. I think it's a great shout. Like, I looked at the bench against Southampton, was almost embarrassing for a Premier League team. Every one of those players on the bench, other than one or two I hadn't even heard of, they were all academy kids that haven't even played in the Premier League before. Bielsa likes a thin squad, but that was taking the mick.
I know.
They need a better squad than that.
Yeah, they do. It's interesting. I mean, and Wolves is not an easy game for them coming up next. Because Wolves, you know, you look at the stats of the top attacking teams and the top defensive teams, and Wolves are right up there. Big, big win for them against Villa, being 2-0 down as well, gives them loads of hope going into this. They're not going to fear playing Leeds, not like maybe they would have done last year. And that running stat to me is absolutely key, because for a Bielsa team to be outrun is very, very concerning, I think, if you're a Leeds fan. So I've got Rafinha. I'm hoping, you know, obviously him being back in the side makes a big difference, but he's carrying them. He's going to have to carry them. He's so far and beyond the best player in that side. Can they keep him past January? That's the other question. Could a club come in and test the waters with a 40, 50 million pound bid?
I think they could. Now he's playing for Brazil as well. His stock's gone up even more. Newcastle will chuck money at Rafinha, like, but I don't think he'd go. He wants a. This guy could be playing for Liverpool. Like, I could see Liverpool, who have got. Yes, you would struggle to get in the 11 at Liverpool. Fair enough. You're not going to get in ahead of Salah and Mane. But these guys, Salah, Mane and Firmino, are all around 30. They've literally all hit 30 within the same year. They're going to need some fresher legs. And they've got Jota was a great signing because of his age. Well, Rafinha's young as well. So I could see him going Liverpool, you know.
Yeah. Ooh, be a hell of a squad they'd have. Talk about
thin
versus packed squads. We touched on most of the teams in this fixture. So I'm not going to waste too much time going through others. We've given our Man United Liverpool prediction. We think West Ham are going to beat Spurs. Brentford Leicester should be a great game. The one other team I want to talk about is Everton, because obviously we've had the news that Toure is now out for a while, which is just awful news for them. I mean, you know, Richarlison's been out, Calvert-Lewin's been out, and it's been Toure, Gray and Townsend that really stepped up and sort of carrying them. Toure out now. I mean, Watford were absolutely dreadful against Liverpool. Like, I know you're not expecting much from you know, Ranieri's come in, it's a new side, but you want to see a bit of fight and a bit of bite. They offered absolutely nothing against Liverpool. They were so, so poor. Do you think they're going to have a bit of optimism about them going into this Everton game? Or do you think a kind of a patched up Everton side will win that?
I can see a really easy home win again.
Can you?
I think when you bring a new manager in halfway through the season, a few days before a game week starts, but then going into a really tough run of fixtures, you just can't expect much. Like, one thing Ranieri is going to do is get a bit of organisation in that team.
Didn't see it against Liverpool at all. They looked very disorganised.
They're all over the place. I mean, Danny Rose as the left centre-back was a really weird one. Like, Danny Rose can play wing-back in a five, but left centre-back Danny Rose, for the first goal, it was embarrassing the way he was turned by Salah on the halfway line. But to get that organisation, the one thing you need is time. Like, he needs weeks on the training ground. Like, by the next international break, he gets 2 weeks on the training ground, which is in like 4 weeks' time. Sure, they'll look better off the back of that. But until then, I think they're going to concede goals for fun. I can see Everton winning comfortably here.
I'm not as convinced, you know. I think Doucouré out is such a huge miss for them in the centre of midfield. And Rondon looked absolutely knackered after about 60 minutes in their last game. And they couldn't sub him because they literally haven't got anyone else to come on. And, you know, he doesn't look like he's going to score. Townsend is you know, crossing for no one. It's very much the Townsend and Gray show now. And I think
Iwobi got a few chances.
He did. Iwobi did have a few chances,
And he's naff. Like, you look at it and go, if you're having to start Iwobi, you've probably got some issues. Like, and then you look in the midfield and you go, oh, Decore's not there. Well, you look at that Everton squad and go, who could replace Decore next to an Allen in midfield? Well, Sigurdsson could. Oh, he's not around. Oh, Andre Gomez, the guy that's, you know, played for Barcelona and got loads of international caps. Well, he's always injured as well, and he's red flagged. So I'm with you on the Doucouré replacement, but they do seem to find a way. Like, somehow, Rafa found a way without Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison, and they continued winning games. And Rafa's just found ways. And I still think he'll find a way. Might need a shift in system, because I can't see who's going to be that sort of box-to-box midfielder alongside Allen. They're really short.
No, I know. It's all down to Saar, right? It's what Saar turns up for that game. Because if Saar turns up in that, Watford have got a real chance of winning that, and it's a good time to play Everton. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be comfortable for Everton, but I think they should still have enough to beat Watford.
Interesting that Ranieri played Saar down the middle as the number nine. I'd said on the deadline stream with Mark and I were kind of speculating that he might, and he did in a similar way. Do you remember he played 4-4-2 in that title winning Leicester season? You had Vardy always playing on the shoulder, and you put Vardy alongside a workhorse like an Okazaki, and you just it gets the best out of him. And I wonder if he's going to convert Saar to like a Vardy, number nine on the last shoulder. And what Watford do have is a huge amount of forwards who can all do the workhorse shift. Talentless 6-7 out of 10 forwards that can run the channels and provide service for Saar, do the Okazaki role. They got loads of those. So it's going to be interesting to see where we sort of put Saar moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I got rid of him on the wild card, but I think if you've got him and you kept him for that Liverpool game, you definitely keep him now. I mean, you know, Doucouré out definitely weakens Everton. They've got Southampton at home in game week 10, Arsenal in 11. You know, it's not the greatest run, but if he's going to be playing out of position, and if Watford, but again, if Watford turn up at Everton and just lose 2 or 3 nil, then Ranieri's probably only got a few more weeks, and they'll be looking for another manager to come in. It's very, very, very strange club, Watford. Yeah, we'll see what kind of happens. Anyway, Gianni, that is 40 minutes. Absolutely perfect, as always. I like the look of your team next week. I think you should be in for a good week. I'll be interested if you panic and bring in Mbomo and who you start and who you play and all that. I sense you're probably going to roll the transfer. That's my prediction. And I reckon you'll captain Lukaku no matter what. Even if Chelsea lose 4-0 to Malmo, I reckon you'll still be captain Lukaku, let's be honest. But yeah, thanks for joining me, and I'll see you again next week.
Thank you, mate. Lovely to chat as always. And I look forward to hopefully a nice 6 points off my bench from Livramento this week.
Fingers crossed.